was a dark day, gloomy, dreary, rainy, in the middle of Manhattan. And it was 4:30 in the afternoon, rush hour traffic. The subway stations are packed. And a woman runs up to the conductor of the A train stopped at the World Trade Center, this goes back 10 years, and tells her, "Stop, you can't continue with the train." So the conductor says, "What's wrong, lady?" And she says, "Cat just ran into those tracks. If you continue, you will kill the cat. You can't continue with the train." And the conductor says, "Lady, I have 1,000 people on this train waiting for me to move. There's another train in the station behind me. There's a whole series of trains waiting to come to this station. This is rush hour traffic, ma'am. I can't stop my train." And the lady says, "Well, if you move that train and you run over that cat, I will have all the animal rights groups suing you for what you just did for animal cruelty. So you decide, I am not willing to let you mow over that cat. Because if you put together all the 1,000 people that are on this train and all the 1,000 people on the train behind it waiting and all the thousands of people that are waiting here on the tracks for the other trains to come in, all of them put together, if they sat down to reconstruct the cat, they could not bring life to this world. That is a life form, that cat. And if you are going to run over that cat, I will sue. So you better not move till we get that cat out of here." So the conductor figures, why should I deal with this? I'm not going to take the rap. I'm not going to call the shot. He calls the manager of the station and he says, "This is the story. What should I do?" The manager of the station thinks for a second and says, "Why should I take the rap? Do I know what's going to happen if they sue? Can she sue? Can't she sue? I don't know." So he bumps it up one notch. And to make a long story short, for 15 minutes, the New York subway stations are frozen, because this is a very central station that's standing there frozen. No one wants to call the shot. Now, you can imagine what that means. At 4:30 in the afternoon, this is a train system, the metro system. You have millions of people using this system. You're not talking about thousands or even tens of thousands. You're talking about millions. Approximately 5 million people each day are transferred by this train system. So imagine. Oh, so that's what they did ultimately. But you understand how long that took till they got someone down there to go into the subway tracks to pull out that cat. You're talking about people were detained nearly 45 minutes. So all of New York was talking. All of New York was buzzing on that day and the next day. Whether this is ridiculous, how could it be that so many people are suffering? You have people stuck in the tracks behind this train, and they're sitting in a dark tunnel just waiting to come. You have people have to make it home to their babysitters. You have children that are waiting. Everyone's lives get disrupted because of this one cat. And you had other people who were saying, "Wait a second, the lady has a point. Really, that is a life form down there. You can't just run it over because you're in a rush. So what if a few 100,000 people are going to be detained 45 minutes out of their day? How can you run over a life form?" And it was interesting to see how the talk station started talking about it. And you have people on the radio talking morality. What is moral? What isn't moral? When it's interesting that we live in a world where most people think we can define morality. So today we'll think about it, and people on the radio stations and the TV stations, everyone was trying to analyze what's right and what's wrong. And the truth is, I'm willing to bet that if we pose the question in this room, that there will be different opinions here. Most of the people will probably side with one opinion, but some of the people will side with another opinion. Am I wrong?
No.
How many of you think they should have run over the cat? And how many of you think they should have detained all the people? And the rest of you don't know, I take
no,
it.
No, I think that they should have stopped the
movement. Yeah, yeah.
What?
It's such a big deal. They should have just gone down and removed the cat.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah, well, that takes time.
The point is, do you stop? The point isn't how you get the cat out. The point is, do you stop? Or do you disrupt the lives of maybe millions, but definitely thousands upon thousands of people for one little cat?
Well, I mean, no one's going to stop that tonight for 25 minutes.
You see?
I've been stuck on the train. You run the kettle.
It's worth the situation to resolve.
Okay. So, but you see that if we have to run a government, or if we have to run the metro station, or if we have to run anything in our lives, then there are going to be differing opinions. Let's take a more difficult question. A couple come to a doctor, and they discover that the wife is pregnant, And then they do an amniocentesis, and they discover that the child has CP, or the child is going to be retarded. And let's say that the woman is only 40 days pregnant. Do you say the woman should abort? Do you say she has a right to abort? What happens if she's 6 months pregnant? And what happens if it's a disease where the child will suffer his whole life, but he'll live? Do you say, well, maybe they'll discover a cure? Unfortunately, these are questions that people are faced with daily. And every day there are women who discover that they have a fetus that is going to have serious problems. And the question is, what is morally correct and what is morally incorrect? And if you haven't yet in your lives been challenged with such a question, you will. It can be a question of, do you vote for Obama or McCain? Or it could be a question of, you're in the army and right now you don't know whether to shoot or not. Those of you who will join the Israeli army, unfortunately, every day soldiers are faced with these situations. You see a child. The child seems to be carrying a grenade. You don't want to shoot a child, but he's about to kill you. Now what do you do? I mean, these are things that the Israeli soldiers are faced with daily. What is morally correct? What is morally incorrect? Now, if I asked all of you, is it morally correct to have a slave? What would you say? No way. No way. Why should one man own another man, right? If I asked all of you, were those who wrote the constitutions moral people? They had slaves, right?
You have to look at it in the context of their time period. In the one sense, you can say no. But at the same time, that's why you have to be very careful when you make judgments about people, because ultimately morality is, regardless of if there's a God or not, to a large extent, the way we view it, it's going to be subjective, and it has to be. And so you can't really answer that question almost.
So what you're saying is that there's no real good, no real bad. So if the Puritans... I don't know. It certainly sounds like that's what you're saying.
It's not as simple as just that question.
I understand it's not as simple. So that's what I'm asking you. Were the Puritans moral people or not?
In some respects, yes. In some respects, no.
If the Puritans had... They believed, and people believed up until about 100 years ago, that just like you have to educate your kids, and sometimes you might have to smack them if they misbehave, you have to educate your wife, and... Sometimes you're going to have to smack her if she misbehaves.
So were Jews moral because we used to have slaves? Were Jews moral because we started all these wars and used to kill each other like people do now? Maybe not.
Wait. I'm willing to try and answer those questions.
Okay.
But I think we have to go one step at a time.
Fine.
And I think we also have to remember that there's a difference between Jews and Judaism. Judaism
sure.
is what Hashem says this is the way we're supposed to live.
For
Jews
sure.
are supposed to live up to that. Okay, so let's see. Let's see, one step at a time. So we look and we see that over time, what's considered completely moral becomes considered completely immoral. And then we could come to the conclusion that was just mentioned, that morality is just defined by the people and by the time. So if I think it's moral to kill, why shouldn't I kill? Even though I live in a time where everyone else thinks it's immoral, but I think it's moral, so I could be Dr. Kevorkian. You guys know what Dr. Kevorkian is, right? And let's say I don't want to be Dr. Kevorkian, but I think this world is a miserable place to live in. So what I'm going to do is when I have patients, I'll give them some cyanide, I'll tell them that it's something good for them, and they'll drop dead 2 days later, and I did them a favor, and I think that's moral. Why can't I do that? And what's wrong if it's murder? Who said it's bad to murder? Maybe it's bad to live.
I think
one second. Morals are defined by the law.
Danger once you start bringing God into your reason, because look at what the Christians do when they bring God into their reason.
Yes. I didn't talk about God. I didn't talk about God. What?
Of course, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying bringing God in as.
Yeah, I understand.
I agree with you. We'll get there. I'm asking questions so far. I'm not.
No, I know. I wasn't arguing with you.
I'm just saying that if morals are self-defined,
right.
So then every person to each his own. Why am I bound by the time I live in? If I think it's moral to beat my wife, let me beat my wife. You live in your house, I live in my house. And if I think it's moral to kill, let me kill. You don't want me to kill, so you have to kill me first. It's a dog-eat-dog world. So then there are no morals. Then we've evolved to a point where it's not what you said earlier, that the morals are defined by the time, but the morals are defined by the person. Because there's no reason I should be bound by my time period. So I live in Thomas Jefferson's time. I decide he's an immoral person. He has slaves. I could shoot him in the head.
It's not as black and white as we think, and that it isn't just one factor. I was saying basically what you're saying now is that there's more than one way to look at it.
Okay.
That one was right and one was wrong.
Okay. So, in essence, modern philosophy has really come to this conclusion. Modern philosophy has basically said that there is no way that you can define morals. There is no way that you can define that one action is good or one action is bad, because in essence, what you think is good, someone else will think is bad. There's no connection between what is true and false and what is good and what is bad. That is where modern philosophy has arrived at. Welcome to Judaism. We agree with modern philosophy in a sense. We say that if man were left to his own whims, then man would just simply kill one another. There's no such thing as well, this is immoral or that's moral. If we didn't have a government, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that even a government that's a corrupt government is better than no government, because if it were up to no government, then we'd be killing one another. Oh, so the Torah, though, the Torah, one of the things that people very often ask about the Torah is, why doesn't the Torah change with the times? In certain ways it can adapt, but in many ways it does not. And the idea is that when God created the world, God first made a blueprint. God wrote the Torah and looked at the Torah and said, okay, now that I see the Torah, let me see what kind of world to create. The world was created off of the Torah. Now this is a deep concept. You guys have to think about it. I don't expect you to understand it in 2 seconds. What?
It doesn't make any sense at all.
It doesn't make any sense at all? Well, let me tell you a story. I'm a moel. I do circumcisions. So there was once a bris where the moel wasn't... He knew how to do bris, and he did it fine, but sometimes you could slice an artery. Depends on how the child is built. And the child could really bleed, and you have to stop the bleeding. So I have training. I know how to stop bleeding, like tie up arteries and stuff like that. But not every moel does. So this guy was a pretty, he was a good moel, but he didn't know how to stop it. So he does the bris. This is in Hebron. And he does the bris, and up shoots a stream of blood. And someone runs up and grabs the baby, holds the blood close, and says, "We're taking him to the hospital right now." So they take him to the hospital, and they come to the hospital, and so long as you hold it shut, so he doesn't bleed to death, and then the doctor closed it up, which is something that had the mole known, he could have done it on the spot. I do it, I mean, it doesn't usually happen, but I could do it on the spot. He didn't know how to do it. It's something that usually they only do in hospitals, but you could really do it. It's not a complicated procedure. So they bring the child in, and the doctor looks at the baby, and he was not, I don't think he was even a Jewish doctor. And he says, "You Jews, you're doing this barbaric thing again." So the EMT who brought in the baby said, "Listen here, this tradition is much older than you are. So you just keep quiet and do your work." And that line always stuck with me, how the EMT tells the doctor, "This tradition is much older than you are." So when we approach concepts in Torah, we have to remember, it's much older than we are. Let's wait. Let's hear what the tradition has to say. And with time, maybe we'll mature and understand it better. Maybe we'll see it from a different angle and we'll understand it better. Let's be slow to judge. We're approaching something that's much older than we are. So let's see. The concept of Histakel Boraita Uvara Alma, God looked in the Torah and off of that created the world, is a complex concept. I agree with you. It's not something that just makes sense like that. You hear it and you say, "Yeah, that makes sense. Sure, the Torah is a blueprint. You just look at it. Sure, now you know how to create a world, right?" That doesn't work, right? So obviously, Chazal were intelligent people. And when they said it, they knew that this isn't like a blueprint for construction, right? So the question is, what did they mean? Which deserves its own few classes. What's your name?
Josh.
What's your full name?
Josh.
Yehoshua, right? Okay. Do you know where we have the acronym of Yehoshua in prayer? So look at Aleinu, and you'll see that each sentence begins, Aleinu begins with an ayin, Shehem begins with a shin. You'll see that Yoshua is spelled backwards in Aleinu. You'll take each sentence and you'll see that the sentences spell Yoshua backwards, because Yoshua, when he entered the land of Israel and saw all the pagans surrounding him, how they're going in their immoral ways, and they have nothing to hope for because they're really not serving a God. They're just bowing to a piece of wood and stone. So Yeshua said, wow, we're so lucky we have this Torah. And he composed Aleinu when he entered the land of Israel, and he signed his name in Aleinu. Now, you never noticed that Aleinu has your name in it, right? Okay. So by the same token, there might be many things in the Torah that you just don't notice. The Gruz disciples came to him and said, where's the Rambam show up in the Torah? So where did the Rambam live? Who knows? Lived in a few places.
Spain, Egypt.
So he's most famous for the time he spent in Egypt. He was the king's doctor. And the verse says, Lema'an revos mofsoi be'eretz Mitzrayim. I want to make great miracles and make wondrous things in the land of Egypt. Revos mofsoi be'eretz Mitzrayim is the acronym of Rambam. So that was the grow. You'll ask me where my name shows up. I don't know how to do that. But the bigger you are, the more you know how to see things in the Torah. So you're right. On the surface, we don't understand how the Torah is the blueprint for the world, but it is a concept that with time we'll understand better. The one who created the world, he can also tell us what is true good and what isn't true good. Meaning, if we're going to come and say, this is good and that's bad, so you're right, we might change our minds. And if we don't change our minds, our kids might change their minds. But the one who created the world, he knows what's good and what's bad because he created this world. He said, do not murder. He also gave us guidelines. Is abortion called murder or is it not called murder? There are guidelines to this. He gave us a tradition. He gave us the written law. You look at it, 613 mitzvahs, they don't seem to encompass everything. Then you start hearing the oral law and you say, wait a second, oh, so tefillin have to be black. Where does tefillin show up in the Torah? Where does it say tefillin in Shema? Ah, what does totafot mean? Oh, you guys know a lot. Wow, very nice. Okay. Say it. Yes, sir.
How is it possible that in the 630 minutes of God contradict each other? What's the point in having things you can't achieve?
So, in a few minutes, we'll have an open session, and then I want to hear what you mean by they contradict each other. I'm not sure what you mean by that. I'm not sure what you mean by you can't achieve. So, I want to hear what you mean, but let's just finish this point, and then we'll hear what each person has to say, and I'll be happy to try and answer. Tonight, by the way, I have a session with the guys at Machon Meir where they can ask questions through the night. And it was suggested that maybe you guys come over there and join us. We have refreshments, we have pizza.
What time?
I don't know, whatever time you end your activities here, would you guys be interested?
Yeah. What's up next?
We go there till midnight at least. Midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, Thursday nights.
Which class? The one on the
plate? No. It's a different yeshiva. It's a yeshiva where I teach at night.
Where is it?
10-minute drive from here. By foot, it's very far.
From here?
From here, yeah.
Where is it?
Kiryat Moshe, yeah.
Can you get a bus there?
What?
Can you get a bus there?
We'll see if you guys will want to come, so we'll arrange transportation. So if you guys are interested, let me know. We'll talk to Rav Neri. We'll see if we can work it out. I start there at 6:30, but we run until at least midnight. And if we don't finish... No, we do a lot of learning, but towards the end it becomes open question. By the time you guys will get there, it'll be probably just that. So if you guys have questions and we don't finish them here, we might be able to continue there. We'll see. Okay, so going back to this point. That is why the Torah is eternal. Because if being that God created the world, he could tell us what's good and what's bad. So he could tell us when is it permitted to do an abortion, when is it prohibited to do an abortion, when is it right to kill, when is it wrong to kill. If left to our own whims, then we might say you can kill whenever you want, and that's wrong. Or we might say you could never kill, and that's also wrong. If a person's coming to kill you, so what do you mean I can't kill him first? That doesn't seem right. But can I decide what's right and wrong? Well, if I'm left to my own whims, then I have a problem. I don't know when to call the shots. Look at what's happening in the country right now. There's a huge argument between the left and the right, what we should do with the Arabs. Why is there this argument? Because the country is not willing to accept the Torah. Well, if you don't have the Torah, so then some people say, give away Gush Katif. Other people say, okay, then give away Sderot. Other people say, then give away Tel Aviv. Other people say, then you're right, give them the whole country, let's leave. What are we doing here? How far are you going to take this logic of, well, they were here first. Okay, so then let's just fold up our bags and leave. By what right are we here? Why is Gush Katif any different than Tel Aviv and Jerusalem? You ever ask yourself that? No? What's the answer, Noah?
Is that it's on the edge of Palestinian territory.
Why is that Palestinian territory less than Jerusalem?
It's not.
Oh, so why leave Gush Katif? Let's leave here too. So what? So now they're firing missiles on Sderot. That's on the edge of where they live. And they were firing missiles on the Golan. They were firing missiles into Haifa. And you know what? There are Palestinians in East Jerusalem. Maybe we should leave West Jerusalem because that's also on the edge of where they live. So I'm just saying, you understand that if you're not based... If what?
Yes.
I didn't hear.
Fire missiles back.
I'm not saying what we should do. I'm just saying you realize the moral quandary we're in. If we don't have a Torah, then we have very, very little ground to stand on. Then by what right are we here? There was once an Arab who was a terrorist, and he was an old man. He was in jail after committing hideous crimes. And he was sitting in jail, and he had decided that he's leaving the life of terror. He was already an old man. What does he need it for? And he's sitting there in jail, and it's Pesach. And the guard who's watching him, sitting next to him, and he's watching all the cells, and he sees the guard bringing in lunch, and he's eating pita. Pita's chametz. And he sees him eating non-kosher food. So he tells him, it's Pesach. You're Jewish. How could it be that you're not keeping what it says in your Torah? So the guard laughs and says, why? What do I have to do with the Torah? So the Arab said, what do you mean? You don't keep the Torah? I initially thought I'm leaving because you guys have the land, fine, it's over. You guys put me in jail, I concede. But if you don't believe in the Bible, if you don't keep what it says in the Bible, then I see no reason to stop this fight. I'm going to go back when I get out of jail and tell all my children and all my grandchildren that we have to keep up the fight because we're going to win. Because if you're not connected to the Bible, if you don't keep what it says there and you don't believe in what it says there, then you have no right to be here. Until now, I thought you guys had a claim. You guys came by it says in the Bible, God tells Avraham in last week's parsha, next week's parsha, he tells us we're going to have this land. So fine, I also believe in the Bible. I believe in the Quran, so I believe my way, but fine, I can understand your legitimacy. But if you don't accept that, so the Arab said, and this was reported, the Arab said, I'm going to tell my whole family, we just got to keep up the fight, because we'll win. You don't stand the chance, you have nothing to stand on. Now this is true in the sense of a country, but it's also true in the sense of an individual. When a child sees his parents, and on Shabbos, they just turn on the TV. So he just goes out and dates a non-Jewish girl. And they say, what are you doing? We brought you up to be a good Jew. So he says, what do you mean? You compromised here, so I'll compromise there. What's the difference? Either you keep it or you don't. If you don't keep it, why should I? Right? That's why the reform movement has to go into conversions now. Because they don't have a next generation. You can't have a next generation when you tell your kids you could just do what you want. Because then the kids go all out and do what they want. Why does the reform movement have to convert? Now, why are they fighting for conversions? Because they're dying. Their synagogues are empty. I don't know if you guys are up to date on what's going on there, I guess. Probably not. But I'm telling you, that's what happens. The next generation doesn't continue. Because if you're not sticking to it, why should I stick to it? So now I want to address the question that was raised earlier. Well, in the name of God, people have murdered everyone. So we say Hashem is true and the Torah is true. And the Christians say that what they believe is true. And the Muslims say what they believe is true. So everyone's killing in the name of God. First of all, check the history books. It's been a few millennium that we haven't killed anyone in the name of God. Not in the name of God. Who did we kill in the name of God? That wasn't in the name of God. It was the Hasmonean kings who were not religious. Some were not even Jewish. They didn't do anything in the name of God. They did it in the name of holding on to the throne. And the sages kept a distance from them. That wasn't the rabbis. That wasn't going with halacha. You're right. There was blatant murder. They killed out whole towns and whole cities. But that has nothing to do with Torah. That's just murderous kings who wanted to hold on to the throne. And anyone they thought was rebelling. They killed their siblings. They killed their children. You're right. Anyone who opens a history book, you read Josephus, you see, there were murderous kings, 100%. But that has nothing to do with halacha. You're right. There are Jews who are murderers, granted. But that has nothing to do with Judaism. That brings us to a different question, which is, well, by what right am I right? They say they're right. So that's a question that deserves a class unto itself. But I want being that it doesn't seem to be a question that's concerning you guys too much, so I want to go on to whatever questions are concerning you, and if you want, we'll have a class on that. That's at least its own class, if not its own series. Rafi, what was your question?
I've been told that you can't keep all the mitzvot because if you keep one, then you're breaking it up, then vice versa.
Tell me which.
I don't know the exact ones, but I definitely heard from many people that's the case.
I don't know.
Therefore,
many people said the world was flat.
It's not.
I don't know. It seems flat to me. I don't know what you're talking about.
But it's not possible to keep all the mitzvot because if you keep one, then it's like being not necessarily keeping the other.
I don't know. You're right, that the Torah says, thou shalt not steal. And then the Torah also gives me an obligation. If you do steal, return the theft. So there are mitzvot that tell you how to fix if you've transgressed. And you cannot perform those mitzvot if you haven't transgressed. In that respect, you're right. You cannot keep all 613 because some mitzvot pertain to transgressions. If you transgressed, you have a mitzvah to bring this sacrifice. So maybe that's what people meant. That in certain respects, you cannot keep all 613 because some of the 613 are relevant to what happens if you transgress. How do you fix what you've done? But that's not contradictory. That's conciliatory. The Torah is telling you, how do you fix what you've done? That doesn't contradict. You're right. Maybe that's what people meant. You cannot keep all 613. Some are for Kohanim, some are for Levim. But to say that they contradict, show me which two contradict. I haven't yet seen it. What other question? Guys, any other questions? Not all at once now. Okay.